You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that. Well, many of us have been waiting, and we will wait about another, 18 hours for the U.S. Supreme Court to hand down its decision on two same-sex marriage cases that are really, well, some people believe that they have the potential to be as pivotal as Roe v. Wade was for the issue of abortion. Tomorrow at 10 o'clock, the Supreme Court will announce its decision in a case regarding the Defense of Marriage Act and Prop 8 in California, both of them bearing upon the issue of marriage and its definition. Joining us to talk about those two cases and possible outcomes, Sharif Girgis, he's a PhD student in philosophy at Princeton University and Juris Doctor candidate at Yale Law School. He's co-author of the new book, What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense. Sharif, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me on.
You have said that this debate is not about homosexuality, that it's not about expanding marriage benefits. What do you mean by that, and what is this debate really about?
Well, I think it's really about marriage. It's about what vision of marriage to enshrine in our law. And we've faced the same question in other forms before. That's how I know it's not about homosexuality. We faced it in a big way with no-fault divorce laws. Is permanence part of what marriage is about? Now we're asking, is marriage really about a certain kind of intense emotional union that two men can have as well as a man and a woman? Or is it about making sure, at least from society, from the state's perspective, that kids get the best shot at being reared by their own mother and father?
So let's talk about the cases. There are two cases. It's a rather complex decision, I think, in any case, the Supreme Court will be making. What is the worst case scenario that you can imagine announced tomorrow by the U.S. Supreme Court?
The worst case scenario would be a kind of Roe v. Wade redux, where the court imposes across the nation, without any warrant in the Constitution, I would argue, a one-size-fits-all rule for all the states, where it says you have to redefine marriage to include same-sex relationships. But I think that's actually pretty unlikely because of the experience of things like Roe v. Wade that have kind of poisoned poisoned our politics and really breeded resentment that an issue of great social importance was taken out of the hands of the people and their elected representatives.
The two cases before the court, although they're separate, they're related, and I think the court is treating them as strongly related to one another, the first one having to do with the Defense of Marriage Act. What is the court being asked to decide?
In the Defense of Marriage Act, it's basically being asked to decide whether the federal government is free constitutionally to decide how to spend its own money when it comes to marriage programs. So whether it can limit marriage to the union of a man and a woman just for federal purposes. Now, the two main counterarguments are, well, it's a violation of equality and maybe it's a violation of states' rights. But the fact is, states remain completely free as they were the day before President Clinton signed that law into effect, to have whatever marriage law they want. And as far as equality, I mean, I think you're just not going to move one inch towards figuring out a marriage policy by the word equality. You know, equality tells you what to do once you've figured out what marriage is, what it's for. It says basically, whatever that is, make sure that it's available on an equal basis. But it can't tell you what marriage is. And that's a question the Constitution is silent on, and it's something that the people ought to decide.
Then the other case related to it that is before the court and will be announced tomorrow has to do with California's Prop 8. What is the court being asked to decide in that case?
There it's being asked the more straightforward question of whether states themselves are free to recognize only opposite-sex relationships as marriages. That's a case in which California voters, by a strong majority in 2008, in a popular referendum, chose to enact a constitutional amendment that says that marriage is a man and a woman for California. Now, that's a state in which all the practical benefits of marriage are available to same-sex couples through domestic partnerships, but the question of what the institution of marriage means was decided by the people there.
In that worst-case scenario, you see kind of the Roe v. Wade scenario where they impose across the board a one-size-fits-all kind of requirement on all states to simply permit same-sex marriage without any constitutional warrant. What possible response could there be to that?
Well, there could be a constitutional amendment. Now, I think the constitutional amendment to make marriage simply a matter of opposite-sex relationships across the board would have a very tough uphill battle. But I do think that a constitutional amendment that just threw that issue back to the states, that said that marriage law is a matter of state definition and not a matter of constitutional reasoning, could stand a chance, and that I think there would be significant support for that. But either way, I think it's important to remember that the same-sex marriage debate is really just one phase of a broader struggle to make sure that our marriage culture is as strong as it can be, and that has as much to do with no-fault divorce, out-of-wedlock child-rearing, permanence and exclusivity and monogamy among opposite-sex couples, as it does with this debate. This is just one way of doubling down on what I think is a misguided vision of marriage is mainly about adult emotional fulfillment.
If the Supreme Court were to announce that it has upheld the constitutionality of DOMA and that the voters in California were well within their rights to approve of Prop 8, in essence, best-case scenario, how likely do you think that is with a court that is at least somewhat divided on those issues?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more likely in the Prop 8 case than in DOMA. It looks like Justice Kennedy is a little more inclined to strike down DOMA, and he is going to be the swing vote in this case. But you never know. I mean, the court surprised us before. It's a fool's errand to figure out what they're going to do before they do it. And I think, the lesson of other social policies that have been taken out of the people's hands is pretty instructive here, including for the justices.
Does this court seem inclined to want to take social policy out of the hands of the people?
I think it's had an up-and-down relationship with that question, and that it's just hard to tell because of that. But on these issues, on issues of sexual relationships and what goes by the name of privacy jurisprudence, I think there has been a pretty mixed record, and so it's not a sure thing that they'll defer to the people's judgments.
If I were to ask you to prognosticate, what do you think is the most likely news coming out of the Supreme Court tomorrow morning with regard to both of these cases?
I think it's probably the conventional wisdom that DOMA struck down and that Prop 8 is punted on by the court just kind of avoiding it through procedural ruling. So we'll see how right that is. It's less than a day now.
What does that mean?
It would mean that that while DOMA gets struck down, the court does not strike down Prop 8. It just says that the litigants didn't really have standing to bring the case in the first place, which would basically, in most likely scenario, mean that the very original trial court decision striking down Prop 8 would stand, but it wouldn't extend beyond California. It's not even clear, really, whether it would extend beyond the parties in the Prop 8 litigation itself, whether that would require an across-the-state rule as well. That would be part of what I imagine would get resolved in the aftermath.
So talk in more general terms, as you have here already, about the general decline of marriage culture. What effect would that have on lower-income communities, African-Americans?
That's an important question because it's an overlooked point in this debate that the breakdown of the marriage culture, which I think you get if we undermine the idea, the stabilizing norms of marriage, we say marriage is about emotional union, tends to hurt the poorest and most vulnerable the most. They have the least, the thinnest financial cushion beneath them. They have the least social support other than the strength of marriages and the marriage-based family. And so they're the ones that get hurt the most. This is really a social justice issue as much as it is a cultural one.
We tend to think of this in very short term, but it sounds like in your responses here that you are asking us to think about this debate that's come to the Supreme Court in two different forms in longer terms, not only in its terms of its history, but in terms of its long-term impact. Why is it so important to have a broader view of the decline of marriage or this debate over marriage than simply should homosexual couples be permitted to claim for themselves the title of married?
I guess it goes back to the point we started with. This isn't about homosexuality and approving it or not approving it. At least from my perspective, this is really about something that no society can do without. You know, societies have had all kinds of attitudes towards homosexuality over time. No society has just has so eroded the marriage culture and then lived to tell the story, because there's something that only the marriage-based family, the biological family, provides very well, which is an environment in which you can get enough people who are decent and upstanding and productive. That every other institution of society depends on that. Every aspect of the common good depends on it. And without it, we can't really function at top performance. And that's why this debate is not an optional one.
So what you're saying there with about 30 seconds is that we're really facing a broad cultural crisis with this question. About 30 seconds.
Absolutely. It's really a cultural issue that's been going way before same-sex relationships, and that'll go way past it, either no matter what the court does tomorrow. And for that reason, the court won't do our work for us. We've got to make sure that, beginning with ourselves and our own homes and families and lives, but also in what we stand up for, we're upholding the ideal of giving every kid a shot at a stable household, of the mother being reared by and knowing the love of the man and woman that brought him into the world.
Folks, you can purchase the new book, What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Sharif Girgis is a PhD student in philosophy at Princeton University, a Juris Doctor candidate at Yale Law School, and co-author of the book, What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense. Sharif, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
I think it's true. We face a cultural crisis of our own design and making. The fact that we have been asleep at the switch on what we thought of as less harmful, less impactful decisions about marriage and the family, taking a casual attitude toward divorce, laid the groundwork, really, in a lot of ways, paved the way for this. Was it inevitable? No, but we're going to have to take a longer view of this, both looking back and looking forward, regardless of what the Supreme Court decides tomorrow. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.
Hey, St. Louis, how would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.